You are listening to Mark Hatmaker Rough and Tumble Raconteur. This is a grab bag of old school Western martial arts, resurrected indigenous ways and empirical musings tinged with a heavy dose of respect, admiration, let's call it hero worship, for these hosses of yore. Hey crew, this is Mark Hatmaker coming to you for the Comancheria. Today let's talk about training for courage, actually training for this remarkable virtue, this attribute that many of us covet. Hell, I wager all of us covet it. And we're going to really break it down. We're going to micromanage this because courage can actually be approached from many different ways, depending on the social sciences. We could even get philosophical with it. But we're going to talk about two aspects, intensity plus micro duration with courage. And it sounds like, we're getting to the scientific weeds here. Just a wee bit, how we can actually use some testable aspects that we can actually increase courage in a human being. That's actually done all the time when we're training soldiers and other extreme athletes. Help us get our mind around this. See, the body is a time machine in one aspect of things. That is, the mind is a time machine, the currently intangible part of the body. The mind can anticipate a future event, and the tangible portion of our body, the physiological structures and internal biochemical processes and all their attendant prowess, begin behaving in a direction towards that future state. Now, is that making, what the hell are you talking about, man? That sounds like gobbledygook. Okay. But to make that clearer, the body, while existing in the present, is always on the lookout for what might be on the horizon, and then it gets to work preparing for that possibility. We have everything in common with Pavlov's dogs, as they salivated at a bell that signaled dinner time. Well, we do the very same thing at the just merely viewing, let's say, a Chicago deep dish takeout menu, or the aroma of freshly baked bread, or hearing the smooth pour of a good bourbon in a glass. We get these images, and that sounds pretty good. There's a like physiological reaction going on in the body the entire time. So in a sense, this anticipation is a form of a time travel. We're already imagining ourselves in that state, in the condition that we have. We're not yet tasting whatever comestible or tipple it is we have summoned into mind by various bells, but our physiology goes into preparatory tasting mode just the same as those long-dead Russian dogs. Now, we live in the here and now, me and you, but we allow our thoughts to go to the not here, not yet, maybe never, and our bodies will cooperate with this future-tinged stream of thought. Let me give you another example to drive home our future-obsessed physiology. Really think about this. I'll give you some words here. I'll give you four words and add some images. I want you to think of sex, lust. I mean, I'm talking deep lust, skin, nudity. Now, let's string those words together. Naked, lustful, sexy, nudity. Conjure some images. All right? Now, those words themselves perhaps don't start you full-blown down the path of future thinking, but any number of images, if this was a video podcast and I cast some images up there at the same time, suggestions or extracts from some of the greatest romantic, lustful literature in the world, or whatever your thing is, that will. That's why pornography and romance novels are some of the largest publishing and biggest phenomena on the internet. Some would say is the main driver of the internet, and actually romance fiction is the main driver of a publication. People love experiencing these future-tinged events without actually being involved in the activity. Our sexual physiological reactions ought to begin in the present before the future of what we hope will happen has even occurred. Okay, now with that in mind, we see that the body begins a future orientation physiological reaction in a present that does not as of yet contain the future state. All right, now the wise of you out there already say, all right, Mark, what exactly does all this have to do with courage or training for courage? All right, good question. Glad you asked that. Now let me distract you with a little science about sprinters and marathon runners. Now, scientists curious about peak heart rates in sprinters mid-task, they're talking, they want to know what the peak heart rate was in the midst of the sprint, made a surprising finding about the time-traveling body. See, they attached the heart rate monitors to the competitive sprinters. They were thinking they primarily wanted the detail about the peak heart rate in the midst of it. Anyway, so they attached these monitors to competitive level 60-meter sprinters, and the heart rates rose to 148 beats per minute. Okay, now this rate elevation is not mid-sprint. This is pre-sprint, 148 beats per minute. This is in the blocks, or preparing to get in the blocks, 148 beats per minute. This is far higher than most of us get in a standard workout, or the everyday person may ever touch in the everyday life, 148. Not even running. And that's not what they're walking around at. This is the time traveling body. This is the anticipatory feeling of getting ready to run. This is, in the words of the study, quote, an extraordinary 75% of the total increase in heart rate during the run. You getting that? 75% of the total increase happens in the blocks or happens in the moments before they go. The body is in preparation. It is in training for what is being asked to do. Often what is happening whenever we see people who experience extreme heart trauma or cardiac events, whenever they're having to do something, exertion, and they don't train for exertion, is because their heart has never done this sort of anticipatory work before, let alone done the actual stress of the work before, and boom, it kind of kiboshes and you know, works against us at that time. Well, these sprinters are kind of doing double work. They actually do the work, and by the fact they know they're going to do the work heart and the physiology responds to the work coming up. Just the same thing with the lustful, sexy nudity. It's often the thoughts and the pre-anticipatory that gets everything kind of the motion and lotion, lotion and motion. It is adrenaline is the driver of this anticipatory spike. Adrenaline management is also the driver in our responses to events or episodes where we may have to bring courage to bear. Now, it is surmised that just in Pavlov's dogs or Chicago pizza menus and sexual suggestion, the anticipatory physiological changes prepare the body for the stressors or demands on the horizon, or in the hopeful horizon in the case of pizza and sex. Now, let's drive this finding home with some flip side scientific observations. Heart rate monitors attached to competitive marathoners did not find this same anticipatory spike. Granted, the peak heart rate requirements are less in the midst of a marathon because the pace is much lower. But even then, we do not see this 75% anticipatory increase in the needed output for a marathon. It's not even close. So in other words, whatever your peak rate needs to be for the marathon, it's not giving us this spike up. So indeed, there is a training effect that goes on with marathoning, but the body sees no reason for it because it's seen as a difficult event, a grueling event, but it's not seen as one that is has a stressing event to it. It doesn't truly mimic fight or flight. In experiments with wide ranges of activity, the greater the perceived exertion or the greater the perceived perhaps danger of the activity, exertions, danger going together because they're calling up on some of the same fuel sources, the activity, the greater the spike. But significant anticipatory spikes are only seen in activities that combine both high perceived exertion and short intense duration, like as we find in fight or flight sort of situations, you know, quick intense battle, CQB, you know, hand to hand, the scrum in the parking lot, we're doing this little bit of mountain rappelling, did the gear just fail on me? All these things don't go on over long term. We don't want to train stresses in this repetitive stressed environment. We're looking for these short duration events like you would find in true reality training, what we talk about in our outer limits drills, things to constantly stress and change it up. As soon as it becomes mundane, anticipatory, the time traveling body goes away. It disappears. We don't want that. We want a body that can prepare before it needs to be ready. It's very much like some people say, well, I got to stretch out before I run. When you're doing your training properly, we know we're having these big stressors in front of it. Our body is doing the emotional or the physiological stretching out preparation before the actual activity begins. The body floods itself with adrenaline before high intensity, short duration efforts, even a well-trained athlete. All right. So this doesn't go away. It does so at a surprising degree. Actually, it does so even more efficiently because this body knows exactly what's being required of it and starts jacking and elevating everything up. Whereas many of us who don't have allow these sorts of stresses to get in front of us, we will not be prepared to offer them. And then sometimes we misinterpret this. Sometimes if we are asking ourselves, I'm getting ready to do some skydiving or whatever your version of scary is, asking somebody out, what have you, we'll feel that adrenaline and anticipation. And we think, oh, no, I can't do this because my body's all scary right now. And you're not completely unaware of the fact that that's what it's supposed to do, man. It's supposed to get you jacked up and ready. This is giving you the fuel, the adrenaline, and the over-the-top feeling that you're going to need. So we require these things to actually fuel the anticipation. If we're running away from our fears, we interpret all of our anxieties as like, oh, I have anxiety, so this means I shouldn't do it. No, often it means that you probably should. It is a fuel source that you're supposed to get in there, and it will dissipate once you use it in the activity itself. And so, as we know, since the body does not differentiate between internal states, our mind is seeking to label this useful adrenaline jump, and it falls on terms like jittery, nervous, anxious, all the close allies of fears. Anyone who knows who has received a clinical shot of adrenaline and what the injection, if you receive a shot of adrenaline, the injection makes you feel anxious. That is the side effect of actually having adrenaline secreted. And there's no perceived stimuli. You will start trying to label. You get the shot of adrenaline, you look around, oh, I don't know, that clock is scary, or whatever. You're trying to start labeling just because you have that secreting in there. And we do the same thing whenever we're doing this time-traveling body thing. We try and go, oh, why am I scared, or whatever the thing is. Go ahead and do the big event. Now, the crux of this lesson is this. With all of the above in mind, everything I've said, the more our body experiences floods of adrenaline, as in the pure pre-high intensity, short duration burst, the more it becomes conditioned to deal with this flood of adrenaline. The adrenaline flood does not lessen over time, as we see illustrated in the trained athletes and the sprinters. The adrenaline is there to prepare the body for the perceived demands of the future, but the perceived emotional negative reaction to the anxiousness, that goes down. And this will be across the board. We see it in trained soldiers as well. That's often why initially everyone has the adrenaline spike before they move through a killing house and any sort of a clearing exercise. We're using simunition to make something seem absolutely real. Everyone's going to have that adrenaline spike. And it might even be to the same degree, but the veteran mentality turns it into, oh, this is just exactly what it is. The body's getting ready for it, and it labels it properly. It labels it as something that you need to be there. It's the stretching out of the mind, the body, the emotions. You don't want an absence of this. You actually want to crave it. That's why we want to train to have as many adrenaline spikes in our lives as we can, so we handle life better this way. But by inuring the body to adrenaline management, we just may be able to better handle the adrenaline encountered in plant stressors. And again, 60-meter sprints, skydives, doing the risky thing, approaching that guy or girl that you've seen twice at the food truck, any unplanned stressors that we meet, those street altercations, approaching the girl at the food truck for the first time you saw her, or, oh, I got to swerve real quick because this guy appears to be coming at me head on in the intersection, whatever. We handle these better whenever we've already had the adrenaline and realize this is a fuel source, I'm getting ready to use it, and then not always, oh, I'm anxious, I can't do this, I got to walk away from it. Walking away from this pre-sprint feeling is the wrong way to go. You got to run into it. Now, some suggestions for integration. I mean, it could be scale your training, be it strength or conditioning, what have you, more towards these intense bursts and less towards the extended sessions. And you'll see this in unleaded training when we do our the resistance portion of training. We don't like these long times. It's not like tons of reps and long times under load. It's shorter times so we can create some aspect to this. But this is not the only way to do it. You want to offer these high intensity over the low grade. Whenever you're doing your fight training, we want to fight the clock and or beat the clock where possible. Don't stretch it out. Some people look at the 3 minute on the timer, or they'll look at the 5 minute on the timer, and they learn out where they're going to do these stretch outs. Well, that's coming at it from the marathoner's point of view. Even if these are far shorter durations, you know, I've got to make it through this, so here's how I'm going to husband my resources. You want to break bag and folks pads, sparring drills, grappling scrimmages into bite-sized, high-intensity mini rounds, and that's MINI rounds, where go is the dictum. So instead of going, let's go for 5 minutes, let's go for three. I mean, force these out in smaller bite-sized pieces, what you will actually encounter on the fight. If you can do them this way, and there's no going to be harm to your training, because over time, if you're doing, let's say, if I said I'm going to do 10 3 minute rounds, well, let's say we change this and let's do 25 30 second rounds, and it's still going to wind up with the same conditioning effect for at the end. So it's no sweat on that. If we can add competitive partners to spur us on harder and faster, that's even better. In everyday life as well, you want to get out there, you want to do more things, do anxious things. And this is, I'm dead serious about this. If you think, I don't dance, I don't tango or whatever, say yes to these things. The more things you do, because you go, I don't like it because I feel, what if people look and I'm going to be anxious of it? You go, that's the point. Everyone who does it feels that, but the more you do it, just the better you're going to be. You're the sprinter in the blocks, feeling the spur. You learn how to better manage that adrenaline that comes through. So when it comes to fear management, courage training, situational preparation, whatever you want to call it, we are wise to implement all the tools we can. Low grade, low impact, or long drawn out training, no matter how pat on the back ultra miles you have, it makes us feel you may feel great and get the t-shirt for the 10K, but it simply may not cut it for this aspect of training. It's not knocking putting your miles in if you love that, but there's always a temptation to think that we need hours of this or that or whatever, but it can be trained in a manner that prepares the body and mind and spirit. We can heighten our courage by choosing to go approach things, run at fear, run at the fear, run at the anxiety. As General Gordon P. Sullivan in the Military Review, July-August issue of 1996 said, more is not better, better is better. We find it often for courage training, preparing the body is training. Pack on the intensity and all the jitteriness you feel in front of something, whether it's going to be that 60-meter sprint or that first time you've ever rappelled or the first time you free-dived to 30 meters or the first time you get out there and says, I guess I'm going to try and tango in front of everyone like this. This is all to your benefit. And it doesn't mean, I mean, even the tango, that's not even at the bottom of the list. If you do it and face it and do it and face it and do it and face it, well, man, you're cooking with gas. All right, crew, hopefully you enjoyed this little maundering and science and way to hack your training a little bit. If you did, like, subscribe, share all that noise. I'm told by the algorithm gods it helps the podcast. So take care of yourself. Well, if you dig what we just discussed today, I'd like to invite you to like and subscribe to the podcast. Hell, support it if you want. I'm not your dad. Do what you want. And if you're a glutton for punishment, just visit our website, extremeselfprotection.com. You'll find links to the blog, all of our products, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of more pages of like musings.